Please welcome Gene Melter.
Thank you, Kirk. Good evening, everyone. Well, my entire life, I've loved those English novels, those classic novels from the 19th century involving deserving orphans and wealthy patrons and scheming relatives and the question, who's going to inherit the fortune? And, you know, I'm talking about like Dickens and Jane Austen and the Bronte sisters. When I was a young woman, I actually got to live one of these plots, sort of. So after college, I joined a Catholic do-gooder organization, and I lived in a prayerful celibate community in Fresno, and we also lived in poverty, relative poverty. I mean, when you can get out of it, it's not real poverty, but and then at the end of that year, we were released and each given $50 sent on our way. Well, $50 is about enough to get you home to your parents, but I had no intention of going home to my parents. That was not an option. But I only had $50. So I'm an educated young woman with no car, very few possessions, and $50 cash. Amazingly, and through my Catholic connections in the Bay Area, I landed myself a really great gig. Companion to a wealthy elderly woman in Berkeley. English novel. And I'm going to call her Edna. So my job was to keep her company from Friday afternoon to Monday morning. Now, Monday through Friday, she had a live-in caretaker named Mimi, who was a Filipino immigrant, and she wanted to go home to her family in Hayward on weekends. And I wasn't Edna's first companion. She'd had a series of companions, always young people at loose ends like me. And my duties were mostly conversational. Mimi couldn't converse or couldn't discuss the news of the day and all this because her English was very limited. So we just talked all weekend. And I did some light cooking and just a few tasks for her, but Mimi did most of the work, the chores and things and the shopping. Now, Edna was very sharp. She was close to 90, very sharp, couldn't see well, had bad glaucoma, had bad emphysema and could only take a few steps, really. And some orthopedic problems. So she lived in her bedroom. Now I want to emphasize how fortunate I was in this situation by a little contrast. So in Fresno, I lived in a low-income apartment building right next to the freeway. There were cockroaches and everything. And I'd gone from there directly to Edna's house in Berkeley, which was a gorgeous two-story house, old house with beautiful gardens front and back, filled with antiques and art and treasures. And Mimi had her own apartment, and then Esmer had her bedroom and bathroom, and I had the whole upstairs. So you go up the stairs, and there's this big, beautiful bedroom with blue hydrangea wallpaper and a window seat where I could sit and read and look out at this garden. And then I had a huge bathroom carpeted with an actual vanity. And I could just sit there. And on one occasion, I sat there and gave myself a perm. But a vanity in a gigantic bath, all for me. And so it seemed like paradise in some ways. And all I had to do was talk to this fairly nice old gal for 2 days. And so we got close. I got to know her real well. She told me the whole story of her life. She remembered everything, starting with childhood and the Midwest and her family, and then her marriage and all about her husband and why they couldn't have children, and then his death, and her teaching career. So Edna had been one of those extraordinary teachers. So she taught for over 40 years in Oakland, and she taught remedial reading, and she loved her work. She said she dreaded the weekends and looked forward to Mondays. She said she never would have retired if not for her health problems, and she missed it terribly. And she wrote textbooks on how to teach remedial readers and mentored hundreds of teachers. She was legendary, it sounded like. And she's the reason I decided to become a teacher. Well, so we got close, and Edna grew more fonder and fonder of me, to where she wanted to spend time with me on my days off. So Monday through Friday, I had paid gigs. I had two part-time jobs. I was trying to save up money to get a car and move to San Francisco. I didn't want to spend my life there as Edna's companion. But it got to the point where she wanted to see me every day. And she could hear me coming and going. And so she'd call out, or she'd ring her bell. She actually had a bell, English novel, next to her bed. And so I'd go in and sit, and we'd talk for hours, and she wanted to hear all about my day. She loved to give advice. And other boundaries were crossed. So one of her favorite activities was asking me to dress up in her clothes. So she had a vast wardrobe from her teaching years, many decades of clothes, dresses and skirts and shoes, jewelry, and she'd ask me to put things on and kind of parade around her bed and tell me how great I looked. Now, she was a big, tall Norwegian gal, and her clothes didn't fit me at all, but she thought they did, and she'd tell me how nice I looked. Why didn't I wear her clothes all the time? They were just sitting in the closet. They were much nicer than my clothes. I could just wear them all the time. What a waste that... But I would politely decline. She'd get very frustrated and angry about that. Well, if I'm not going to wear her clothes, at least I should wear her jewelry. It wasn't nice stuff, just costume sort of jewelry. I could be wearing her jewelry. It was just sitting in a drawer. Then it got to be, I could be driving her car. She had this big old Buick-type thing that barely fit in her garage. I could be driving that car and going places. And then she'd often told me how much money she had. She had a lot of money. So two incomes, no kids, and she was a wizard at investing. And she told me she was very wealthy. Why didn't I spend some of her money and have some fun? I could buy stuff for myself. I could go places, do things. I declined all of it, all of it. All I did was eat the food and sleep in my bed. And this is why. Because I knew there was an unspoken bargain there, that she saw me as a daughter or granddaughter. She loved me, and she was going to give me, share her wealth in exchange for love. But I knew that I did not love her. It's hard to explain why, but I just did not love her. I was kind to her. I knew it would be very, very wrong to take anything from her, knowing that was the bargain, that she wanted the daughter she never had. So things got tense. She got very angry about this as time went on. And it's hard to spend an entire weekend with someone who's mad at you. So I tried to kind of accelerate my plan to get out of there. Now, she had... she had no relatives really to speak of. That was a point she made often. She had no one to leave her house or her money to, because most of her relatives were dead, and the few that were alive were elderly and well off. So why leave anything to them? So she made that point often. Well, so she had just a few friends, and one of them was a Catholic priest who I'm going to call Father Thornbirds. And this is, for you young people, this is because there was a novel that was very popular in the 70s by that name, not Father Thornbirds, it was just called The Thornbirds. And it was about a very handsome priest who has an illicit affair. And this guy, Father Thornbirds, was very handsome. Irish guy, white hair, maybe about 50, really handsome. And he could have played... that character in the TV miniseries instead of Richard Chamberlain, all right? So, and he came around. Now, Edna was not a Catholic. She was some sort of vaguely Protestant person back in her childhood. She wasn't religious at all, but he came to visit once or twice a week. And she liked men. Like if I ever had a date, he had to go in there, sit on her bed, and talk to her for, you know, half an hour. And none of these guys were allowed upstairs in my bedroom, but they spent hours in her bedroom. And she was very flirtatious. If she had some warning about a man coming over, the lipstick and the pretty robe. So Father Thornbirds came over often, and they would laugh and talk for hours, and I'd serve them tea. He was very cold as me, cold as ice, but warm and charming with her. And technically, he should have been concerned about what was going to happen to her soul after she died, which was going to be pretty soon. But I don't think that subject ever came up. I think you know where this is going. So I did save up my money, and I found a replacement for myself, another lost young person, and I did move to San Francisco, but I kept in touch with Ed, and I'd call her, and sometimes I'd come visit. Well, a few weeks had gone by, I call her, no one answers, totally unusual. She's there, or one of her caretakers is always there. So I called this kind friend of hers I had met one time, this elderly lady, and asked what was up, and she said that Edna had passed away. Peacefully, and I was sad but not so surprised, and I realized that I wanted to see the house once more, and also there was one thing I did want of Edna, something she had told me, one of the many things she told me she wanted me to have, which was her textbooks that she had written. And so I said to this lady, you know, what's happening with the house? Who's in the house? Do you think I could go there and see it and get these textbooks? And she said she left everything to a priest. And of course it was Father Thornbirds. So my next day off, I drove over there, parked my car, went up to the door and knocked. And this very attractive woman answered, maybe 40-ish. And I explain who I am and why I'm there. And then she calls Father Thornbirds, only she did not refer to him like that. She said, not Father anything. She called him by his first name. And he comes to the door. He's very irritated. He's not wearing his priest outfit. I'd only ever seen him in the black outfit with the white collar. He's wearing his civvies. And they look pretty comfortable together, those two. He's grumpy, but he says I can come in and I can get the textbooks. I know right where they are because they're in this attic off my old bedroom. So I go get them, and I come back downstairs with this box, and he doesn't ask me how I am or, you know, offer me tea or anything like that. He pretty much shoves me out the door. And as I'm driving away, I thought to myself, wow, all that could have been mine, but at least my soul is intact. And I'm not sure the same could be said of Father Thornbirds. I don't believe in hell now, but back then I kind of did. And I thought, you know, there's got to be a special place in hell for a priest who flirts with a lonely old lady so he can have a comfortable retirement. Thank you.